You're hearing voices.
I'm out in the middle of Texas, sitting on my pack by the side of the road. I was walking for about an hour, but I'm tired now, and I'm getting a sunburn.
Road Trip, an hour of traveler's tales from Hearing Voices and NPR.
Hey, somebody stop! Somebody stop and pick me up! One of you guys, Peterbilt, Ford, Datsun, Trailways, bus, stop and pick me up!
We're traveling with Scott Carrier, Mark Allen, and Willie Vlotten.
Dear Pete, don't know if you got my letter, but I think it explained everything, all right? Sorry again about running out on the rent and pawning your TV and your folks' wedding rings. I woke up the other night in the backseat of my uncle's car somewhere in California, and I swear I was shaken from a nightmare.
Stay tuned for Road Trip from HearingVoices.com. Buckle your seat belts. We're about to go on a road trip. This is Hearing Voices, brought to you by NPR, with help from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the National Endowment for the Arts. I'm Larry Massett. Our show today, Road Trip, an hour of traveler's tales. How wonderful to travel the world. How educational, how broadening, what fun. Imagine, if you could go anywhere, anywhere at all, where would you go? Paris. Tibet. Sydney. Naxos. Rangoon.
Tbilisi, capital of the Republic of Georgia, the airport, 4 a.m. The customs line does not appear to be moving. We're stuck in a cement shed, slapped down on the tarmac with no windows, no fans. I count 1, 2, 3 working light bulbs. It's hot even at this hour. The air is thick with cigarettes and diesel fuel. Alex and I have been traveling now for, what, when did we leave the States? Who knows? We haven't slept in 48 hours, anyway. Come on, Alex mutters. Let the extortion begin. The last time he came over here to visit his family a couple of years ago, one customs official stuck out his hand and demanded $50. $50 for what? That's a lot of money here. Tax, the man said. Tax for what? Tax for you're going to be breathing our air. Alex says things he'd rather not show customs. A laptop he wants to give to his sister, some dollars, possibly a lot of dollars, for his mother, and I've got these funny tape recorders and mics. We're both feeling nervous when... what's this? A guy is waving at us from the far side of the room, a pudgy guy in blue jeans, waving in a bossy way like he expects us to do something. Oh, my God, says Alex, it's the cop. My friend, the cop. Friend, well, Alex recalls he spent an afternoon with him the last time he was here. A chance encounter through friends of friends. Man did promise to meet us at the airport, but that's just a nice thing to say. Yet, here he is. And he really must be a cop, because he starts flashing a badge and barking and shoving people, and bingo, we're out. Out of the customs line, out of the airport, we're bouncing around town in a shiny black SUV with the stereo cranked up, and I'm thinking, great, any minute now, we can get some sleep. The cop will take us to the train station, and we'll be on our way to Batumi, the town where Alex's family lives. Great. Not so great, Alex says. Our friend, the cop, is going to drive us to Batumi himself. He insists. But that's 300 miles, isn't it? And the roads are bad, aren't they? Alex shrugs. Georgian hospitality. Can't turn it down. Okay, I'm too tired to argue. Fine. The cop will drive us to Batumi. But first, champagne. The cop takes us to his apartment, pops open some bubbly, and flips the TV on so we can enjoy loud music while we drink. I check my watch. It's 5 a.m. The apartment must have been grand round about 1890. 20-foot ceilings, parquet floors, tattered silk wallpaper, dust everywhere, exposed wiring. Not much furniture apart from a couch. A body could sleep on that couch. When the cop spots a teddy bear on the floor, he quickly hides it behind the couch. Maybe a wife and kid someplace, but they've been edited out for this performance. Our friend isn't wearing a wedding ring either. He says it is time now for us all to take a bath. Ever been to a Turkish bath at 5:30 in the morning? In the main room is a marble pool full of steaming water, deep enough to drown in if you pass out from the heat. The steam smells like sulfur. Overhead, a domed ceiling with a hole at the top lets in light, or it would if the sun were up. Off to the sides are smaller rooms with moldering chairs and spittoons. It's like a very decrepit, very humid men's club. Naturally, the place was closed when we showed up. The cop just whipped out that badge again, and it must be the right kind of badge, because pretty soon the doors opened for the three of us. Maybe our friend is not any old traffic cop. Alex is now using the word detective, or special police, or security force. It's not clear. Sometimes he even says KGB, though that no longer exists, does it? Whatever his job is, the cop is complaining about it. In Georgia, he says you can't put anyone in jail. Everybody's got friends, got relatives in high places, connections. No way you can take him to jail. Very true, Alex says. Can't put folks in jail here. Except, of course, the poor and the weak. The cop tries English. I can break things. Looking around, I see marble and hot water. What is there to break? I mean, he says, I can break the law. Oh, the law. Well, that's nice, isn't it? Yes, he says, I can break the law because I am the law. ...10 a.m. We are not on the road to Batumi. We're running around Tbilisi in circles. The cop has fed us breakfast at a pricey restaurant and is now dragging us on a tour. Monuments, castles, scenic viewpoints. We've lost all control of the agenda. How come there are no traffic lights? There are lights, actually, but none of them seem to work. In a city of 1 million people, every intersection is a demolition derby. We, of course, plow right on through. Hey, see how big our car is? Maybe the traffic lights went out during the Civil War. I know there was shooting in the streets, but that was 10 years ago, wasn't it? Why don't the lights work now? The cop looks at me like I'm an idiot. When they work, he says, all they do is piss people off. It's dark in here. Priests with long black beards and scarlet robes are gliding through the shadows. They carry gold candles and silver incense burners. Now and again I can make out scary paintings on the walls. Demons, angels with eyes on their wings. 13th century, the cop says. I feel faint. It's the heat, the fatigue, the frustration, whatever. But there's a lump in my throat, and my eyes are filling with tears. I look at Alex. He's getting misty, too. Uh-oh. The cop is beginning to make big signs of the cross in the air. If we don't get out of here quick, we're going to convert.
Yeah. sometime or something.
Okay, we have done Tbilisi. Churches, mosques, statues of men on horseback, Soviet apartment buildings, vegetable markets, the works. We are now learning about the life of Iris Murdoch. It goes like this. The cop has left us at his apartment, now suddenly said to be his parents' apartment. Anyway, there are two rather wrinkled people in charge, and the one playing the part of the mother is force-feeding us watermelons and ice cream. Her son, she explains, has to do an errand, but will be back in 10 minutes. She explained this 3.5 hours ago. Meanwhile, the father has turned on the TV, more hospitality, and seeing we can't follow the lyrics of Georgian MTV, he has kindly switched over to the BBC. The Brits are running a documentary on the last days of the writer Iris Murdoch.
She was very curious about the perversions of power.
Our parents stare at the screen with fixed smiles. They fan themselves, they smoke Marlboros, they pretend to be having a lovely time. "Alex," I whisper, "this is insane. Can't we just walk away from this nightmare and catch the train to Batumi?" "No," he says, "it's too late." We're back in the car with the cop, only it's not the same car. This one looks to have come from a war zone. The windows are smashed, the sides are kicked in, the seats are sprung, and the engine is shedding parts as it goes. Yeah, the cop says, "this is my car. It's the one I use for work. You know how things get banged up at work. This is the car we're taking to Batumi." If we can actually go to Batumi, the cop wants to check out a disco first. "Let's go to the disco," he says, "and pick up some beaches." No. No beaches. Head for Batumi right this minute and step on it. Step on it was not a good idea. I've never imagined potholes this big. A lot of them are bigger than the car. The cop ignores them till the very last minute, then veers over to the wrong side of the road. This isn't driving, this is swerving. Thank goodness the car quits every 10 minutes or so. Something to do with the fuel line. I just wish Alex would stop saying he thinks we're on the wrong road. We're going through mountains and forest as the sun sets. We pass a village where people are milling around a church. "Oh, look," the cop says, "a country wedding. I love them. They're my bread and butter. Those things never end without a stabbing." I'm fading in and out. Sometimes we're in a car, other times we're in a cathedral with Iris Murdoch. Oh, we've stopped again. At first I think we're in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by crickets. Then I realize we're in the main street of a town that's completely dark. Either the people have all left, or the power's gone out, or it's 4 in the morning. I can't tell. The watch is busted. The hands have dropped off just from shaking around in the car. It appears we've hit a pothole hard enough to blow out a tire. We've got a spare, but it's bolted under the trunk, and what do you know, we don't have tools. I don't care. I don't care if we ever get to Batumi. I don't care about anything anymore. The cop seems to think maybe if we kick the car. You know, I'm going to lie down. It may be I'm lying in the middle of the road. That's not important. The point is I'm finally finally, asleep.
You're listening to Road Trip, an hour of traveler's tales from Hearing Voices.
I've been on the road about a week and a half. I'm on a wandering, aimless road trip around the United States. Right now I'm in Dallas, Texas, just kind of floating around the town I grew up in. It's a Friday night about 11 p.m., and I'm going to a Kinko's 24-hour Copies across the highway from the Motel 6 I'm staying in. I'm going there to use the computer access and to check my email and do stuff with my webpage. The place is deserted, except for me and the two guys in blue aprons who work there. Computer monitors line the entire left wall. Next to my console is one of those little gumball machines filled with Skittles. I keep getting helping after helping of Skittles and chewing on them ravenously as I work on stuff. I have all the time in the world, and I'm actually kind of bored, so I'm really taking my time. Suddenly, a young woman bursts through the front doors. She's all flailing arms and shouting to the guys behind the counter, "I need a computer! I need to use a computer! Help me! I need your help! Do you have computers? I don't know what I'm doing!" I don't turn and look at her, although it's obvious she wants everyone there too. "I have a credit card! What do I do? What's over there? Can you help me?" What an entrance, I think to myself. One of the men that works there sits her down at a computer monitor about seven consoles to my left. As he tries to explain to her how to work the computer, she's flirting with him really hard. He's not having it. It seems a little odd. 99% of me is not into girls sexually, but from what I can see out of the corner of my eye as I pretend not to look at her, she looks like a real catch. I see her get up and walk towards me. Okay, here we go. Being a gay man, I'm usually not in the mood for girls flirting with me. She's getting closer. My reactions are ready. Defensive walls going up, locked into place. Closer, closer. Actors getting into position. Then, she walks right past me and to the gumball machine. Maybe she isn't going to say anything to me, I think. I'm so self-centered. I soon hear this little pitter-patter sound all around my feet, and I hear her suddenly say in a loud voice, oh my God, oops, oh, I'm sorry, excuse me, guy, dude, I'm sorry, can you raise your feet? I dropped Skittles all over your feet. Wait, don't move. She has forgotten to hold her hand out, and the Skittles have fallen all around my feet. Okay, no problem. She is now kind of undulating around my body on all fours, crouched down, laughing heartily and saying she's sorry and picking up Skittles and placing them in her mouth and drooling colored drool and saying oops when she does this and looking right into my eyes with her bright smiling and slightly crooked face. Instead of hastily trying to control the situation like I usually do when a girl flirts with me, like instantly talking to her about my boyfriends or how cute the guy across the room is or, okay, stop fooling yourself, Mark. Just by opening my mouth, period, the girl knows you're one half her sex, too, and most likely unavailable for romance. I just kind of earnestly smile and say to her, yeah, I was eating Skittles off the floor earlier, too. It's one of the most romantic things I think I ever said to a girl. My mother would be so proud. She pulls up a chair. We talk. According to her, her name is Breck, and she's a waitress at a restaurant a mile down the freeway. That's about it. We talk and talk about anything and everything. We laugh a lot. Everything is funny to her. She keeps using the word insane over and over. She holds her hands beside her ears and shakes her head back and forth and sticks out her tongue. So the A part of insane sounds like insane. As I talk with her, I notice there are cracks in her friendly facade. I see crow's feet. I see lines on her mouth that run perpendicular to her lips. When she raises her skinny arms all the way up, they look kind of sinewy. Why does she have the body of a young woman with the skin of a 40-year-old? And why, on top of all this, does she act like she's 10? I begin to suspect she's been on overdrive for the last couple of years. Crack, crystal meth, speed. There's something pumping through those attractive, friendly veins. Half of me is saying, hey, this girl's energetic and wacky, and hey, maybe she's in art school. And the other half of me is saying, abort, abort at all costs. This is a $10 crack whore, and the only reason she's chatting you up is because she's either racking up new business or her pimp is searching for her frantically outside in the parking lot and will be in here any minute to snuff you both out. And you know what? I don't care. I'm enjoying this nutball's company. She's cool. She makes me laugh. I like this girl. I like a crackhead girl. Take my money, Breck. Steal everything from me. Steal my credit card from the computer slot while I'm not looking, Breck. See it right there, Breck? It's right there. Right there to your left. Hello. It would be so easy, Breck. What kind of crackhead petty thief are you? Steal my money. Steal my Skittles. Hey, while you're at it, steal my rental car. Have your pimp stab me with a shiv, leave me for dead. Just keep my lonely, road-weary soul laughing up to that point, please. It feels so good. I love you, crackhead Breck. Suddenly, I notice one of the guys behind the counter is gawking at us with a, oh, look what she's doing now, look on his face. I get the impression that maybe this isn't Breck's first time at Kinko's, if you know what I mean. Oh well. I think it's time to call it a night. I tell Breck I need to go. Inexplicably, though, I hand her a card with my cell phone number on it. She doesn't respond. She just keeps looking at my card with her mouth kind of wide open and stares at the card. I drive back to my Motel 6. I've had a nice time with Breck. She's fun. But she sends red flags up in my head, too. Could I actually be attracted to her? Is she a crackhead? Is that a in my pants? I open the door to my room and turn on the light. I brush my teeth. I decide while taking my contacts out that I don't want to see Breck. Not tonight, at least. What would we do anyway? Am I scared of what might happen? Maybe. I take off my clothes and sit on the bed. God, I wonder what Breck's story really is. I wonder what's on HBO tonight. I wonder if... It's my cell phone. Should I pick it up? Is it her? Would she call so fast? Yes, she would. Okay, let me see. You know what? I'm just going to blow her off. I'm not going to answer. Wait, maybe I should answer. But you know what? I'm not going to... Hello? Hi, is this Mark? It's Breck. What you doing? Oh, nothing. I'm just sitting in some random room in some random Motel 6 off some random highway in the random state of Texas. And I think I'm about to have sex with a Kinko's Copies crackhead. So, what are you doing?
Writer Mark Allen at markallencam.com. Coming up, the Great American Road Trip hardcore version, hitchhiking. This is Hearing Voices.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. From NPR, this is HearingVoices.com.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Road Trip, Tales of Travel from Hearing Voices. I'm Larry Massett, and this is my thumb, the hitchhiking thumb. You can't see it, I know. It's been invisible to strangers ever since the summer of 1973. It vanished on the California Coast Highway in a rainstorm, halfway between Big Sur and Monterey. Since then, I've had no luck hitching. My friend Scott Carrier, on the other hand, is a hitchhiking genius. His thumbs are day-glow. He always gets a ride.
Past 7 o'clock right here on Call Radio in Salt Lake City, and once again, it's time to go back.
Look at your jackpack.
Today is February 25th. It's a beautiful morning in Salt Lake City, the town I call home. The air is clean, and the mountains are crisp with new snow. It'd be a good day to go skiing. It'd be a good day to play golf. But it's an even better day to leave town, and I really need to leave. My life here has become especially confusing. My marriage has fallen apart, and I can't seem to finish anything I begin. So I'm leaving. I'm going to walk over to the freeway and start hitchhiking to the East Coast. I'm going to take my tape recorder and microphone and talk to people along the way. So long, Salt Lake. O'clock in the morning, 2 days later, and I'm out on a rocky mesa overlooking a trailer park just outside Page, Arizona. It's windy and cold and clear. The moon is half full and eerie on the desert floor. I feel like I'm on Mars, and the trailer park is some blue-collar space station. I'm here, alone, late at night, doing what? I wish I would have brought my golf clubs. I could hit an 8-iron shot right down on top of the trailer houses. Just before dawn, I hear someone right next to my head say, "Hello." I open my eyes and see 2 feet in white cotton socks, no shoes. There's a teenage kid standing there like he wants to get an early start on the day by making a new friend. He's just been released from the local jail.
See, Monday night, a couple buddies went and got pretty wasted, and I don't know if it was a dare or it is out of drunkenness, but it trespassed into the Empire House.
The what?
The Empire House.
What's that?
It's a restaurant over Main Street. You want me to leave town now.
They do.
Yeah. I ain't gonna go until I get my tennis shoes back. They're holding them for evidence, and I got 10 days before I can go get them back.
Saturday morning. I've been taking it easy for the past few days in Santa Fe, hanging out in the Central Plaza on a bench, reading, looking at the sky, and watching people. It's an easy life. Deciding what to eat is the only work I do. A lanky old man with a bald red head sits down next to me on my bench. We talk for a while. He tells me he's an advertising agent here in town and invites me to his new office, which is in the cellar of an old house a few blocks away.
But anyway, I don't pay attention to age, and I don't pay attention to time, and I don't pay attention to the seasons, and I don't particularly try to avoid getting all involved in form. That's why those pictures don't have any frames around them. Because the important thing is the picture, not the frame. The reason I don't mind being in the basement where I'm now situated is because I don't give a what people think. Now, what people think is that Lou has come. I was in Sena Plaza, which is one of the most prestigious offices in all of Santa Fe. My rent was raised 4 times in 1 year. And after a while I had a very prestigious office, I was losing money every time I opened the door. Now, if anyone is ignorant enough to come into this basement and say, "Poor Lou," I feel sorry for him. Because Lou has never been in better shape in his life. And maybe Lou is the only guy who knows that. But you know something? It's enough. It's enough.
Texas is a state that almost connects California to Florida. I'm standing on an on-ramp to Interstate 10 on the eastern side of the West Texas town of El Paso. A skinny old guy comes limping up the on-ramp, wearing a new wool sport jacket and a cowboy string tie.
What are you doing out here on the road?
Well, I was just walking. I'm down here visiting from Portland. I got off and I'm just walking around visiting. I'm a retired government worker.
Yeah, how old are you?
63, and I'm a Christian. I'm what they call born again. I've accepted Christ as my personal savior. Do you read your Bible?
No.
Well, wait a minute, buddy. I asked one guy, "Can you prove the Bible isn't true?" And he said, "Everything in that Bible is coming to pass." See, I'll tell you, no, there won't be an atomic war until the Battle of Armageddon after the millennium, see? See, the war is going to be in the Middle East. Russia's getting low on oil, see? And that's why they're moving in. Russia's out of oil, see? And the next war is going to be in the Middle East, see? See? And if El Salvador falls, Mexico's next. See? So it isn't the El Salvador troops that's killing, it's all them stinking liberals. We got too many liberals. Reagan is still a liberal Democrat. He's taking orders.
Reagan, a liberal Democrat?
Buddy, if he's a conservative, I'd hate to see a liberal. Of course, if we give the country to Kennedy, Mondale, and Cranston, he'd give the country to Russia. Sure! You see, the trouble is they're socialistic. This nation is turning socialistic, and it's bad.
I'm out in the middle of Texas sitting on my pack by the side of the road. I was walking for about an hour, but I'm tired now, and I'm getting a sunburn. I'm not even sticking out my thumb, and there's a beat-up Fury station wagon stopping right in the middle of the highway to give me a ride. The driver is a dirty-looking guy wearing a black wool mugger's cap. The back of his car is scattered with clothes and trash. I think about telling him no thanks, but the temptation to ride is too great. So I get in, and right away he starts telling me he's going to Florida because his mother's dying there and there ain't nobody gonna stop him. He starts crying. He pulls out a pint of whiskey, kills it, and gives me the bottle to throw out my window because his has a piece of plexiglass cocked into place. He stops in the first town we come to. I go into a 7-Eleven, buy a 6-pack of beer, and tell him he can have it if he lets me drive. He agrees, sinks into the passenger seat, starts on the 6-pack and a 300-mile monologue about Haight Ashbury in the middle 60s. Free love, Owsley acid, Janis Joplin riding down the street on the back of a Hell's Angels motorcycle, Jimi Hendrix shooting heroin backstage at some theater everyone used to play at. Somewhere before San Antonio, the sun goes down behind us, and I think, this guy is a 1960s model, just like his car, and neither one of them are making it very well into the 1980s.
Maybe if I'm by myself down in Florida or something, Louisiana, I can really work things out. But it just seems to me like you know, you try like everything, and you're working hard, and then something happens. Then you go back down. It's like up and down to me. Never gonna get nowhere like that.
What do you think about the United States? Things doing all right?
Well, economy-wise, there's a lot of phony stuff going on in Washington. I mean, I didn't ask anyone to send a space shuttle thing up there, you know? And then here I seen TV the other day. They built this big dish in Puerto Rico, the United States. And they're sending out signals out to space. I don't know how many millions it was to build this thing. And that's tax money, you know, and that's stupidity.
But how much taxes do you pay? You don't pay that much tax.
Well, when I work, they take a hunk out.
You're listening to Road Trip from Hearing Voices. Why don't we leave Scott Carrier where he is for a minute and play a little music. Called Richmond Fontaine from Portland, Oregon. The lead singer, Willie Vlotten, makes up this character named Walter, who's always on the road, on the lam, always in trouble. And Walter keeps sending back these postcards.
Dear Pete, don't know if you got my letter, but I think it explained everything, all right? Sorry again about running out on the rent, pawning your TV and your folks' wedding rings. I woke up the other night in the backseat of my uncle's car somewhere in California, and I swear I was shaking from a nightmare. Your dad was in it, and he had a gun in my mouth, and he was about ready to throw me out of a window. So I guess I got everyone pretty damn pissed at me, both living and dead. Sorry again, your friend Walter. Dear Pete, well, I'm flat broke in Barstow, California, and let me tell you, it's one rough place. The girl I told you about, well, I caught her with a guy in the back of this bar called the Cats. Well, the guy ended up kicking the shit out of me, and he even broke my right hand, and now I don't even have a room to stay in. Now I'm living in the backyard of this old man's house, but he don't watch TV, and let me tell you, it's hard to make it through the day without having one. Hope you got my money order for $15. You know I'll get you the rest when I can. Your friend Walter. Dear Pete, I didn't join the army like I told you I was gonna. I'd been up almost 4 days straight when I thought about that. And in the end, I almost did myself in, but I guess I just went to bed instead. I ain't and I guess the whole world knows it. At least I know it. I moved again, and now I've sort of fell in with some hard folks. They ain't up to much good, and I guess I ain't either. I hope you got the money order for $3,000 in my will. Sorry about all the trouble I caused back home. And say goodbye to Arlo, Marie, and JP, and all the guys in my old job for me. Your friend, Walter.
Willie Vlotten and the band Richmond Fontaine. Now, let's go back to Scott Carrier, who is still on the road somewhere in Texas.
Why should I go paint the town? No good would come from pussyfooting around. 'Cause all the love I need I got And when it's cold outside, I go home where it's hot.
I'm at one of those interstate truck stops that sells anything from diesel fuel to women. Anywhere in the country, everything would be the same. The same trucker food, the same trucker music, the same truckers talking the same trucker talk. This is the interstate subculture, where hitchhikers have about as much prestige as dogs in China. I'm going to be at this truck stop all night, but so are a lot of other people, like my waitress. By about 4 in the morning, the place is quiet, and she sits down with me on her break to talk. She was hitchhiking too, she says, but ran out of money when she got here.
Part of me says, settle down, you know, make your home, make your base. But I was doing that, you know, and it wasn't working. I needed a different perspective on that, you know. The house I lived in was on a community farm, right? Yeah. I was living with a man. I had known his kids, but they were with his mother. The kids did come back. I got pregnant about the time they came back. Immediately got an abortion. So I turned down the child and myself, and yet I still wanted to see if I could work it out with these other three children, living with them. I got kind of lost in it all, kind of got real low, real down, at times thinking of suicide, almost acting it out. I knew that I needed to be happy again, you know. But for me, it meant living somewhere else. So I wanted to go. I don't think you can ever get over an abortion. It's there, you know. I don't dwell on it much. It's best just to let it go by.
I'm in Mount Pleasant, Texas. I don't see anything resembling a mountain. Or anything pleasant either. The sun's going down, and I'm cold. I'm tired of Texas. I'm thinking I'd be grateful just to get out of the state tonight when a guy in a Subaru Brat stops and promises me a ride to wherever I want to go if I just hurry up and get in the car. He's leaving Mount Pleasant for good, he says. He's got a terminally ill wife and a stack of medical bills at home he doesn't want to look at anymore.
There's no sense in no man killing himself, worrying about a family or something, and putting himself in there. Why do you think more men have heart attacks if they are young age than women?
I don't know. Why?
They worried themselves to death trying to take care of the damn women and the kids. They worked themselves to death.
That's why you left.
That's why I'm hooking it. I'm more happy. You don't realize. You don't know me. I'm more happy right now. You and I driving down this road, and I've been in years. This is God's truth. I'm more relaxed. I'm not tensed up. I'm not fussing with nobody. I'm just having a ball. Use my old lady for example. She expects too much out of me. She dumps everything on me. She don't try and help me make ends meet or nothing. All she does is expect me to do it all. I have to do everything. And there's a limit to what anybody can do. Everybody has a limit. You can push this old body so far, and you better stop and think. By God, I'm killing myself. And you will. You'll damn sure do it at an early age. If you push that body, it's like a car. If you don't take care of it, it's going to break down on you. Yeah, it will. You'll wind up with a damn ulcer or a heart attack or something. Just from worrying, trying to please the other people. The hell with them. Please yourself. That's what I feel about it now. The hell with them. I ain't gonna try and please nobody but me.
I drove all night. I drank coffee all night, and I drove all night. Little Rock,
Memphis, Nashville, Tennessee. White lines, country music, and coffee. It's 7 in the morning, windy and cold, and I'm shaking and jumping around just to stay warm. But I'm having fun. I'm enjoying myself immensely. I want someone to stop and pick me up and let me keep driving. I'm ready to go anywhere. I'll put an ad in the New York Times, driver available, and then my phone number. Hey, somebody stop. Somebody stop and pick me up. One of you guys, Peterbilt, Ford, Datsun, Trailways, bus, stop and pick me up. The Monte Carlo's blinker's on, and he's pulling over. There's two big dogs in the back seat, and the driver's a Greek-looking guy listening to an evangelist preacher on his ghetto blaster. Don't laugh. He doesn't think it's funny.
Has he ever been sick? What does God know? He's telling me to believe I'm healed, and I know I'm not.
Sometimes I wish I could just be a spokesman, you know. I mean, if I was knowledgeable enough of the Bible, you know, to just go out the country, just travel around, you know. I mean, just be a spokesman for Jesus Christ, you know, just like one of his disciples.
Have you always lived that way?
Oh, no, I don't know.
Why? What were you like before?
Oh, well, hey, I've been a real troublemaker all my life, you know. I've been incarcerated. I've got about, maybe 20 years in prison. I was the type of child that didn't like to go to school. I was adventuresome, and I wanted to see what was on the other side of the hill, because I was excited by money and the flashy life and everything, you know, that led me to a road of damnation, of just heartaches, you know, not only for me, but my family, too. So I was arrested for different crimes, you know, felonies, after I was an adult. And eventually, did I even murder the person?
Nothing's happening. This book is spiritual dynamite. You need to have it. I want to send it to you. In order to get your copy, all you need to do is write to me, Peter Parker.
St. Patrick's Day. I'm in a bar in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. There's a sad young intern from the hospital sitting next to me.
It's harder to care about what happens to people sometimes, because you can't, you just get so overwhelmed with it sometimes that you just feel like it's easier not to care. You know, there's been a couple times this year when, you know, I go to the work at the hospital and I see people suffering all the time. And, you know, you just kind of take care of them and do what you have to do. And you don't even think about it that much. And then you go to, like for me, I'll go to a movie or something, and I'll be more moved watching a movie than I will be by real life, because my defenses are down, you know. I mean, every once in a while you'll take care of somebody who's just acutely ill and gets better, and that's fun. That, you know, that's satisfying. You see him come in sick and go out well, and you know that you played some part in that. That's fun. But that's certainly an exception. That's not the rule at all. Well, I'm sure it doesn't affect everybody that way. Some people seem to be able to be optimistic and caring, but I think they're on drugs. Just my professional opinion, don't misunderstand.
I met a guy a couple days ago who asked me what I was doing except moving my body from one part of the country to another, and I didn't really know what to tell him. I really don't know what I'm doing. There was this young kid down in Tennessee who was going home to Atlanta.
I'd rather see life as an adventure instead of a routine, not knowing what's around the corner. Going home on the last $2 now.
And I remember a woman in New Mexico I wouldn't mind going back to see.
Love will come again. And the fact that you have loved and that you have been loved is very, very important, and it's very rich.
I'm almost to the East Coast now. I'll get there, look around, and then what? There aren't really any definite endings, no climaxes, morals, or themes in hitchhiking. Nothing is logical. Everything is possible. Well, I made it. I'm in Washington, D.C. I'm in the Capitol Rotunda. It's a big room with paintings and statues depicting our country's most important figures and events. Christopher Columbus reasoning with the noble savages. Ragged patriots being shot down by rows of redcoats. The founding fathers forging the Bill of Rights. The crowds of visitors are well behaved. Police guards are polite and on the ball. Congressmen and senators board elevators looking busy and deeply concerned. The restrooms are clean. The soap dispensers are full. I can go home and tell everybody things seem to be just fine in Washington. But I'm not going home. I'm afraid to. I'm afraid I'll fall back into the same hole I was digging myself before I left. I'm just warming up to being on the road. I've come across the country to the East Coast, but I can still go north or south or back west again. It's April. Spring is just beginning, and the good things that come with this time of year can be enough of a home for now.
You've been listening to Road Trip, Tales of Travel from Hearing Voices. You'll find links to all the producers you heard this hour at our website, hearingvoices.com.
Wait, hold on a second. Just as I'm ready, just then something inside me clicks. Clicks off instead of on. Something lets go and something gives way, and what comes pouring out is nothing. Nothing at all. The calculations in my head go off. The lights in the office in my head go off. Everyone that works in the department in my head, they all go home for the day. I become kind of naked in a way. Open, smiling, vulnerable, unrehearsed.
And so at last, I understood.
I'm Larry Massett. Time to go. Bon voyage.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. Our producers are Scott Carrier, Ann Hepperman, Larry Massett, and Kara Oler. Our intern is Max Darham. Mix engineer is Robin Wise of soundimagery.com. Executive producer is Barrett Golding. From NPR, National Public Radio, this is hearingvoices.com.